you know, there's a risk to going big in the direction that you want to go. There's also a risk, and I think sometimes this is overlooked, in not doing what you want to do, not going for it, right? Not taking that step. And we kind of realized, you know, that for Dad and I in 2019, like, is there a risk of heading out into the jungle in Fiji with this unknown teammate called Alzheimer's? Hell yeah. Like, we don't know what's going to happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are hearing this, you have once again tuned the Consequence of Habit podcast, and this is your host, JT. You know, on this podcast, we have in-depth conversations with our guests about the impact that habits have played on their life, both good and bad. And we use these conversations to help us better understand the things that are in our control and the things that aren't. It helps us analyze the things we do on a daily basis and have an honest conversation about whether those things are adding value to our life or they're holding us back. So with that said, let's get it started. All right, this week on the podcast, I had the privilege of sitting down with Mark and Travis Macy. I originally saw Mark race the Eco Challenge back in the 1990s. It's a adventure race that spanned a couple weeks. It's hiking, mountain biking, mountaineering, and navigating the entire time. And then again, I got to see him and Travis race in Amazon Prime's The World's Toughest Race. Mark's son Travis is also an accomplished endurance athlete and has accomplished more than we were actually able to cover here on the podcast. And I sat down with these two to discuss both their life as endurance athletes, but also how they've managed and still continue to live the best life possible dealing with Mark's diagnosis of Alzheimer's. They've gone on to write a book called Mile at a Time, where they document the disease and Mark's experience with it, both the good and the bad. These two are some of the most upbeat, positive people I've ever met in my life, and their positivity is contagious. I think you'll get that just from listening to these two. Hey, as all of you know, nothing in this world is free. You can have the best of intentions. You want to do good in the world. Well, guess what? Unfortunately, at the end of the day, it costs money. You need to find people, organizations, groups that believe in your mission and support it. I was fortunate enough to come across the Patriot Fund. I reached out to these guys and I told them what I'm looking to do within the veteran community. And they were so quick in response and really got behind what we're doing and have been a huge part of making the workshops that we hold for veterans a possibility. Now, in fact, we have one coming up October 1st. It's for active duty, reserve, guard, veteran. If you're in that military community, this is for you. And it probably would not have happened without the support of the Patriot Fund. So check these guys out at thepatriotfund.org. A lot of things are changing around here at Consequence of Habit. A lot of updates, a lot of things moving around, but one thing remains the same. And that is my unwavering support and love for Athletic Brewing Company. These guys have been part of my journey from the very beginning, when I was even curious about what not drinking beer, well, not drinking leaded beer would look like and how it could possibly make this happen. But these guys provide a product that makes that transition fairly simple. So maybe you just want to either cut down on some of your drinking, you just want to replace it with something that doesn't have alcohol, or like me, alcohol does not fit into your life, either or. These guys got something for you. The one prerequisite, you have to like good beer. If you like crappy beer, look elsewhere. If you guys have not tried Athletic Brewing Company and you want to give it a shot, use promo code capital COH20. Get you 20% off your first order. So without further ado, please welcome to the podcast, Mark and Travis Macy. All right, everybody. This is a true pleasure for me. I have the opportunity to sit down with Mark and Travis Macy today. I want to say thank you guys for taking the time and sitting down with me.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Yeah, thanks, JT. Awesome to be here. I was actually just out riding my mountain bike this morning, listened to a couple of your episodes. I especially like the one with what's he called? The performance director or something from the Intermarché Wanty Gobert pro cycling team. That was a great, great episode. He had a lot of good advice. I'm a huge road cycling fan as well. And just love what you're doing with Consequence of Habit. Like I love the mission. I love how, like, in your own life, you're able to identify here's habits are working and here's that habits that aren't working and how can I change them and, you know, kind of create a new direction. So, yeah, good job. And thanks for your service as well. Did you see that, Dad? JT was it Air Force? JT, remind me.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yes.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, please. I appreciate you guys saying that. You know, I always feel a little strange just because my time was so different from everyone that was, after 9/11, things were, but I thank you very much. I do appreciate that. And yeah, the episode with Ikey Visbeek from Intermache, very cool story. And he was a lot of fun to talk to. So it's one of those things where I had him on the podcast. I didn't really know who he was. And I'm a huge cycling fan as well. My dog's name is Merckx after Eddie Merckx.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, so Greg LeMond was one of my childhood heroes. So I got to have him on the podcast, Sean Kelly. So now when I'm watching the tour and I see Ikey on there, it always brings a smile to my face. So thank you for that. Now.
Yeah. I got to listen to that LeMond one, man. He was one of my childhood heroes as well. And, Dad and I got to do an interview with Mark Allen, who was kind of that same era, in the triathlon world. And that was really special for Dad and I to get to talk with Mark Allen. I'd love to talk with LeMond as well.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good segue into one of the things I'd love to talk to you guys about. I mentioned before we hit record that I've always been intrigued by people that have an ability to suffer more than others. You know, this thing, our brains are here as for self-defense in a lot of ways. And it's telling you, hey, you are in pain. If this is going to continue, like things aren't good, but both of you have demonstrated an ability to shut that off, right? To understand that I can keep pushing past this. And before we move on, I want every listeners to know that, Mark and Travis are father and son. Mark is Travis's dad and somebody that I had the privilege of watching do the Eco Challenge, which is an adventure race. And we can get into what adventure racing is. And it's been part of I've done a handful of them and I love them. But I've watched him race in those. And then Travis, I hadn't seen your dad. And actually, full honesty, I didn't know much about you until I watched the newer version of... Oh God! I was on Amazon. It was the hardest race. I feel like I'm butchering this here.
World's toughest race, they called it. Yeah. So World's Toughest Race : Eco Challenge Fiji. So yeah, you're right. There was like you said, late 90s, early 2000s, Mark Burnett, who's become the, founder of reality TV in many ways. He produced Eco Challenge. He got it on MTV and Discovery Channel, USA Network, et cetera. And it was a very, not only an awesome race, and Dad and his teammates were lucky enough to do, I think, like 8 of those early ecos all around the world, but it was a great television production as well. And like you said, you watched those. I was a kid and a teenager watching them, enjoying it with everyone else. And I always kind of thought, like, man, I want to do the Eco Challenge when I grew up. And then lo and behold, while I was in college, Burnett moved away from Eco Challenge because then he did Survivor and Apprentice and all of these other projects. So there was no Eco Challenge, but the sport of adventure racing continued at a high level, albeit out of the view of mainstream American television. So we were doing similar big races all around the world, but just not on TV. And then so 2017, 18, you hear these rumors, oh, Eco's coming back and, Burnett's doing it. Bear Grylls is going to be the host. At first it just seemed like this, like internet rumor kind of thing. And, finally it turns out, oh, this is really going to happen. And, Dad and I both decided like, we want to do this. And eventually we kind of realized like, we want to do this together.
Yeah. And there's more of that story. So they're one of the differences, and Mark, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when these races first started, these are elite athletes. I mean, they brought in special operations guys sometimes from the military. I've seen them compete in these things. And it was kind of this conglomerate of endurance athletes trying this new sport, where the newer version, you had anywhere from some elite athletes to... I don't know if the term weekend warrior is fitting, but really some people that we're, it's like combining, you know, some pickup, football players to throw and throw them in with some NFL players. It just, it was very cool to see, but what was that experience like for you guys?
I don't know. For me, all of it just seemed pretty normal and not all that out of the ordinary.
Right, right.
Not that difficult, you know. I just get up and go to the jungle somewhere. Seriously, that's how it'll work, you know.
Yeah.
Well, where do you guys want to go? Let's go there.
Yeah. And there was definitely a lot of, especially for Dad, you know, that recent race that we did in 2019 in Fiji, a lot of, you know, just kind of this, again, this is familiar. This is what he's been doing for a long time. You know, during that time, you know, within the year before that race happened, Dad received an Alzheimer's diagnosis. So that obviously, you know, changed things up a bit and added a lot of uncertainty for us about what would happen there. But while parts of it were challenging and dynamic, a lot of it was also really smooth. And back to your question, JT, about, you know, the makeup of the field, I would say from the start, that's something that Mark Burnett kind of honed in on is we're going to have an elite race with top athletes who are, you know, great adventure racers, or they have a, you know, background of, you know, I think about a guy like Mike Closer from here in Colorado. You know, here's a guy who in the Le Mans era was mountain bike world champion,
sure.
You know, so a super top athlete who then kind of creates a second career as an adventure racer. And that would be, you know, his team. They were mainly called the Team Vail and then Team Nike ACG through the years. You know, that's a team of like you said, elite athletes, or the top Kiwi teams. Those have always been elite athletes. But Burnett had this, you know, unique view into like, we're going to make this a more dynamic race and very attractive to the viewers if we get a whole range. Yeah. So, you know, we'll have the top teams, we'll have these sort of, you know, interest teams, whether it's a family or a unique mix of people, or you know, one of those races in the 90s, it was the team of the gay guys, right? And, yeah, right, and right, in right, the right. 90s, like, you know, now it's like half the people in the race are gay and whatever, like, you know, we're all, it just seems normal.
Sure.
At that time, like, that was a big thing to put on TV. There was that one team, remember in Borneo, Dad, there was like the team of the Playboy Playmates. I think Dad's team tried to just stay right behind them the whole time.
Of course I remember them.
So they, yeah, so there's kind of a, you know, there's a whole range. And then, you know, Dad's team over the years, like these were, you know, mostly, you know, guys and gals who are, you know, they're probably in their 40s, like they have other jobs. You know, Dad was a lawyer, he's a serious athlete, but you know, he's also like this wasn't his job. So these are people who are experienced athletes. They're probably not going to win, but you know, they're also not in just because they're an interesting team. And then, you know, our team for 2019, we were some mix of that, I guess, you know,
sure.
Sort of, you know, Shane Siegel and Danielle Ballingy and I, you know, we've all been elite athletes and have a lot of experience and stuff. Dad's got a lot of experience as well, but by no means were any of us thinking we're going to go out there and like try to win or hit the podium. And in fact, we were, our main competition was the cutoffs. We were racing the cutoff times from the start.
But watching you guys race, I mean, it didn't take long to realize what you were racing for was much bigger than a place, right? There was this bonding experience that you're seeing between a father and son. It was a platform to help bring awareness to your to Alzheimer's. So there was so many different things going into watching you guys race. And I agree. I think one of the benefits of having these different skill levels is people watching it can almost see a little bit of themselves. There's when we have, if you watch the Tour de France, people quickly realize like, I can't do that. I can't race three. I mean, at least in their own mind. But when you see, you know, this person who, you know, they're exploring this idea of doing an adventure race. Now they're in with, you know, racing for the distance they did. They could see it in themselves a little bit. So that was very cool. Travis, I understand that you grew up, you're watching your dad. You obviously looked up to other endurance athletes and you're seeing your dad. Mark, what was your motivation? You've got a job as an attorney, you're doing everything you're doing, but what was driving you to be involved in some of these really, just really hard endurance events?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, that's just what I do or did. And, you know, it's just part of my life. And any chance I got it, if any time I got a chance to go someplace and hang out with the guys that I train with and race with, and I go.
Yeah.
And my partners every now and then get a little pissed off, but you know, they had to put up with it.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
they didn't like it, then okay.
Yeah. Right. So, and I want to make sure that everybody understands what we're talking about, because when I mention adventure races to people that don't know the sports, sometimes they get confused with like an obstacle course racing, and I go, no, it's completely different. So either one of you guys can take this one, but if you could give a kind of an elevator pitch on what an adventure race is and kind of what goes into it.
Yeah. I'll take a stab at it. So it's a long distance multi-sport race that's usually done as a team. It's not a relay team. It's a team of people who travel together. Usually the teams are co-ed. Some races have two-person teams or three-person. Kind of the typical for the longer races is a four-person co-ed team. And the races are typically identified as various time lengths. So, you know, kind of at the regional state level around the United States, you know, you might have a shorter race that's 3 hours or 6 hours or 12 hours. There's 24 hours. You know, some races are 48 hours. And then you get up to, you know, what they call like the expedition length. And that would be a race that's probably somewhere between 5 and 10 days. So like the, you know, the world's toughest race in Fiji, like we said, you know, and people can watch it. It's still on Amazon Prime if you want to watch it. It does have Bear Grylls, who is a great host, who is sure. fun to hang out with. But that race, like the cutoff for that was 11 days. So that usually means the top teams will probably be finishing maybe in about half the cutoff time. So, you know, 5-6 days. And then many teams will be, you know, coming in, man, you're on, you know, you're on the 11th day. You've been out there the whole time. Every once in a while, there'll be a stage race, which is again, for the cycling audience, kind of like a grand tour or something, or a week long stage race where you race all day and then you camp or stay in a hotel. And those have been a lot of fun. I was lucky to do a lot of those in Mexico and China and various places. But the, you know, the real excitement, again, these expeditions, the clock is always running. So, you know, from the starting gun to the finish line, you're balancing, when do we stop? Where do we stop? How do we sleep? How much do we sleep? Where do we sleep? All of these things, in addition to, you know, just making your way again as a group through a very dynamic course. You're trekking, you're mountain biking, you're paddling. You could be paddling canoes, stand up paddle boards, rafts, inflatable kayaks, all kinds of stuff. There's usually fixed ropes. So you get to a rocky crag and there's ropes up there and you're going to ascend this thing with two Mars and then, do a Tyrolean from, you know, this spire to that spire and then rappel down and then maybe navigate this fixed hand line. Let's see, did I say mountain biking? There's almost always mountain biking. Always mountain. Usually you're riding your bike. Sometimes it's like you're carrying your bike up and over, you know, through these alders or deadfall, or like, you know, in Fiji, there's some great scenes of like,
oh, yeah.
the, you know, the Rogeron just turns into this clay mud and you're carrying your bike for hours and hours. So, you know, it's super fun. It's dynamic. You don't know, whereas in a triathlon or a road cycling race, I mean, you know the course, right?
Sure,
like,
sure.
Especially road cycling, right? They got this velo viewer and like, you know, every turn and you can look on your handlebars and see like, where's the next corner or how much am I going to climb, all that. You know, adventure racing is not that. You got a map, you got a compass, you're going to plot your points using coordinates, you know, as you probably did in the military from time to time. Sure. And then you got no other tech with you other than that map compass, maybe an altimeter, and you got to find your way. So, you're finding your way, roads, trails, off trail, through the jungle, you know, crossing rivers, canyoneering, you saw that in the Fiji race. Sure. So there's a ton to it. There's the team aspect. There's the psychological challenge of the navigating and communicating and managing, again, the sleep and the gear. There's a lot to it. I really like it. You know, I think one of the reasons I love following road cycling is because it's such a team sport, and adventure racing is a team sport, and you know, by golly, life's a team sport as well. So I think there's a value in putting yourself out there in a team in a challenging situation, because you know it's going to make you a better teammate in life.
It tests your ability. There's this surface level of teamwork when you're around somebody for these blocks of time, these small blocks of time, and maybe your personalities don't mesh perfectly. Mm-hmm. There's another level when you're exhausted. You know, you're 12 hours into a 24-hour race, or maybe you're 3 days or a week into it, and any of those fragments or those things that may rub you wrong are so amplified that I think it's a massive, I would think, I'm saying this, Travis, as if I've done a 5 day or a really long race. I haven't. But I would imagine that there's definitely times where that ego has to be put in check and you have to really swallow some pride and go, okay, we just got to get this job done.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's again, one of my favorite things about it, especially these long races. Everyone is going to have a chance where they're, you know, the strongest person on the team, whether that's physically or mentally, or the map actually makes sense to you, et cetera. And everyone's going to have a chance where they're the weakest person and they need help, right? You gotta, man, let someone else carry your pack, hook onto that tow line and yeah. Let someone tow you along, you know, give up the map. Cause you're so tired. You can't even think straight. And I can imagine that's probably similar to a military situation or even, you know, what you do as a first responder. Like you gotta check that ego at the door and sure. Be ready to, you know, again, provide help, but also ask for help. And again, that's so important in life. And I think maybe this kind of jumping ahead, but that doing that race in Fiji for Dad and I, it was, you know, kind of became this sort of rite of passage where we could ease into, you know, some new roles that we knew were coming with, yeah. With Alzheimer's and, you know, with that diagnosis for me, you know, one of my initial worries and anxieties was like, I'm not ready for this. Right. You know, my dad's 64 and here's the guy I've always looked up to. And, sure. You know, he's always been, you know, not only my friend and adventure companion, but also, you know, my counselor, right? The guy I go to for advice. And, you know, it hit us sooner than we expected. And I think similar for Dad, I mean, here's a super independent guy who hasn't had to ask for a whole lot of help along the way. And we kind of, you know, we had to just practice those new roles. And in some ways doing that race, you know, it forced us pretty quick to accept that and be comfortable with it.
Yeah. It's like a condensed version of this portion of your life that just gets crunched into this race. But, what was the process like of finding out the diagnosis? Cause I imagine at this point you'd already known that this race was on our radar. What was that process like to analyze that, synthesize that information and go, wait a minute, let's keep doing this. And there's an opportunity here. And both of you can speak on this, but I would love your insight on that.
What do you think, Dad? Once, you know, when you got your Alzheimer's diagnosis and you knew Eco Challenge was coming, did you ever, it seemed to me you were always pretty sure you were going to go to Eco Challenge. Am I right about that?
Yeah. I mean, there's no question I was going to go. Wow. I had nothing else to do anyway, so might as well go to the Eco Challenge. And you know, that's, I've been doing that for years.
Yeah.
And it means a lot to me. And man, I'm going to keep doing it until somebody says you can't do it anymore.
Yeah. That's such a simplistic.
That might be next week. I don't know.
Right. It's such a simplistic.
The good news is I've known Mark Burnett for years and years and years and years. So
yeah, that helps.
I can stick with it for a while.
Yeah. Knowing the right people definitely helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, you know, for me, ironically, JT, it was maybe not so straightforward, right, and there was a lot more anxiety involved, and you know, what do we do, what not to do, what's going to happen. I eventually realized, like, there's a lot more uncertainty in life than we might like to hope, and I think the pandemic was a great example of that for many people. We like to think that we're in control. Sure. And it's, you know, it's good to do things, to have good habits that allows us to, you know, have some sense of control and direction. But, you know, honestly, you also got to accept uncertainty and that things are not in your control. And that there is, you know, there's a risk to going big in the direction that you want to go. There's also a risk, and I think sometimes this is overlooked, in not doing what you want to do, not going for it, right? Not taking that step. And we kind of realized, you know, that for Dad and I in 2019, like, is there a risk of heading out into the jungle in Fiji with this unknown teammate called Alzheimer's? Hell yeah. Like, yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. And is it possible that, like, if Dad gets a real bad infection or something, that that's going to have an impact on cognitive decline? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of concerns, but we also realized, what if, you know, if we just kind of stay home and throw in the towel, what's the risk to that, right? What's the risk to, you know, not going for something when you have a big chance? So we decided to go for it, and we were glad we did.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are glad you did. I know a lot of people that I talked to, even at work, that were watching the race, were moved by the story. And Mark, as a beautiful and simplistic answer of it's what I do. So I just do it. And I think there's, going back, Travis, to even your point, like, there's a lot of people, if they made some decisions about trying new things or pushing, you know, beyond their limits and just said, hey, that's what I do. There's a lot of benefit to that, right? Like you said, if you're just sitting home doing nothing, you already know what the outcome is. We already know what that brings. Yep. So,
And I think also, you know, sometimes another thing I've learned through Alzheimer's is just, man, be present. Like, you know, when you got Alzheimer's in the picture, like, it's hard to know what's coming tomorrow. What do we do yesterday? But here we are, be present. Like, you know, right now there's three of us, we're talking, we're having fun, and we're in the moment. So, don't let yourself get sucked down those future hypotheticals too much. Oh, what could happen? What are the risks? Like, oh, what if it doesn't work out? Well, you know, if it doesn't work out, let's say, you know, maybe someone's in a job and they don't like it, and it's not making them the person they want to be, or they're not having the impact they want, but they're afraid. What if I try something else? Like, well, you know, worst case, I bet you can come back to, maybe it's not your exact old job, but something similar.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The worst usually isn't the worst thing that we think it'll be.
There was a saying in the military, and I've heard it a lot of times when people would start the what ifing, and we had this old crusty master, and he'd say, well, what if worms had machine guns, birds wouldn't fuck with them. And it was just this crazy, thing. You're like, what does that even mean? And he's like, just stop saying what if. Yeah. We're just going to move forward. And I thought it was, I thought it was really funny. But you've done that even in your own career, Travis. I mean, going through your bio to be a teacher, I'm going to say your bio, you're a unicorn in the aspect that you have, you hold retreats for, you know, high functioning CEOs of companies and teach them. And then I think in the same paragraph, you race with donkeys. So I think that is two different sides of the spectrum, and you are going to be the only person that writes that, I imagine.
yeah, maybe so. And I also, you know, part of my job is being a dad. Yeah. You know, my wife and I both work full time. We're both self-employed. We got kind of this crazy dynamic thing. And I love that. I get to spend a lot of time with my kids doing fun stuff outside.
I'm sure. So going back to this ability to suffer, cause I don't think we spent really much any time on it. What do you think it is? You know, obviously you've got your dad who's been doing it. So there's this nature nurture side of things. What do you think it is about your mindsets that allow you to push through these things that, other people would find too uncomfortable?
Yeah. You know, the long answer, JT, is, or my long answer, at least, I wrote a book a few years ago called The Ultra Mindset. And, you know, that kind of lays out, like, you know, that book is more prescriptive, whereas our new one is more memoir. But, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of outlines these eight, you know, sort of principles, if you will, to, you know, kind of keep hanging right. tough in there. You know, like the, you know, there's things like, you know, let's think about the stories that we're telling ourselves. Mm. You know, let's think about, you know, the fact that it never always gets worse, right? You know, sometimes you could be out there. I coach, my main job is coaching adult endurance athletes. And, you know, I like to tell people you're preparing for your 100-mile run, or you're in your 100-mile run. If you're feeling absolutely terrible at mile 40, which is possible, because sure. 40 miles is a long way to run. Maybe you're puking, or your legs hurt, or, you know, you're freezing cold. It's very logical to think like, oh my God, mile 80, I'm going to feel twice as bad. And, you know, mile 100, I'm going to feel, you know, way worse. Right. But that may not be the case. You can, you know, put dry clothes on, keep eating, keep drinking, you know, surround yourself with positive energy, keep moving forward. There's a good chance that you might actually feel better. So ride, you know, ride those ups and downs, be ready. You know, again, back to your, you know, the pro cycling coach, he was saying, you know, let's tell the team our 3-week race is not going to be perfect. The other teams are going to throw some punches. We're going to have some shitty days. Someone's going to crash. You know, these things are going to happen. So it's a lot less of, I'm going to go out there and have my perfect race, or my perfect, book writing experience, or my perfect, you know, quarter of work profits. And it's a lot more of, you know, these barriers are going to come, and I'm going to navigate them, right? I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to be, flexible, as I go. You know, another one I talk about in the book that I think is good for athletes on race day or race week, or, you know, race 3 weeks, as it were, in a grand tour, is the idea of, like, think about your thinking in terms of what you're thinking about, or why, like, you know, the what. So when am I focusing on what I'm doing? Like, a lot of people in long races, they start out too fast because they're all excited and there's all this energy, and, you know, Eye of the Tiger's playing at the starting right. line, and everyone's all pumped and riled up. And so they get sucked into the why, right? Why am I doing this? I'm doing this, you know, for my kids, or the result, or cause it's fun, or cause I've worked so hard. You know, those are all good things to think about, but don't start out thinking about that. Like, start out, focus on the what, like the details. You know, so if it's a road marathon, what is my pace? What is my heart rate? You know, what is my fueling strategy, right? In a cycling race, you know, am I falling in the moves, or am I taking the wind, or am I sitting in the draft, right? Focus on the what. And then later on, when things get hard, as they will, because that's what happens in a race, or, you know, again, in growing your podcast or building your business, like, things are going to get hard. That's when you pull out the why. That's when you think about, you know, okay, like, why did I start this? Why is it important to me? You know, what are the intrinsic motivators of this makes me a better person, or I enjoy the process, or, you know, that kind of stuff. And also, what are the extrinsic motivators? Because I think if you're doing something hard, you gotta use both, right? Is it the prize money? Is it the bonus? Is it the next step on the corporate ladder? You know, whatever it is for you, think about those things. But again, you know, use them at the right times, and you might be shifting them back and forth as well. And then maybe a final one I'll throw out there. This is one I've been thinking a lot about with our Alzheimer's journey. You know, my dad and I, and my mom, who's, you know, she's really the leader of the team, and the rest of our family and our friends and the Alzheimer's community, like, you know, we're on this journey together. And again, we don't know what's going to happen or when or how, but we're going to keep going, you know, on the one hand, as fast as we can. And on the other hand, as slow as we must. And I think that sometimes that's a hard thing for, you know, those of us who want to perform, those of us who, you know, I have an ADD diagnosis as well. Those, you know, think of the typical road cyclist, like, man, go, 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 go. Like, patience is not the typical personality trait. And that's good. It's good to go. It's good to push. It's good to, you know, force your way through sometimes. But you also got to be patient, and you also, you have to go as slow as you must and recognize, you know, where you're at and what's realistic and what's the best thing right now.
Yeah. The idea of thinking bigger, right? I know just even my own experiences, so you guys podcast as well. And, you know, podcasting with it, you know, there's a lot of people doing it, right? It's not always easy. You can look at numbers and you can go, man, I don't know if I'm wasting my time. I'm doing this. I don't have the downloads. You know, like I thought I would be at this point, and then I'll get an email from a person or a message from a person. And it's so touching, and it's not even to me. It's about maybe a guest that we had on. I'm just a third party, right? Like, so I'm just connecting these people, and it's every time it's like, oh, that's why. It's not about me right now. It's not about me. And that's the motivation at that time that I need. I wanted to touch on a couple things that you said, and it's this idea of these ups and downs in life. And I really like this analogy of an adventure race, or it could be any kind of race, being, you know, mirroring that just in a much smaller form. And this is just a story I had. It was the first adventure race I ever did. It was an 8-hour race. I think it was EX2 adventure race in Virginia. And my partner, who was in great shape, but he wasn't eating. And I said, hey, you got to eat. You got it. You got it. And within 4 hours or so of going fairly hard, I mean, he completely bonked. And well, I mean, stopped talking, was like, not, his blood sugar has just gotten so low that he wasn't even communicating very much. So I knew something. And you're right. If in his mind, it was only going to get worse, right? He's in a bad place. And because you would never think that it could get better in that window of time. But I think he then OD'd on gels with caffeine, because then he wouldn't shut the hell up for the next 4 hours. This guy was yapping the entire time. Like, you know, finally, I'm like, dude, you got to just slow it down. But
yeah, you got to watch the caffeinated products. The fueling is so important, you know, during athletic performance and also in daily life. Very often when we're having those negative mental downturns with the negative stories of, you know, I can't do this, or it's only going to get worse. Why the hell did I sign up anyway? You know, oh, this bastard, I thought he was my friend, you know, like, you know, all these untrue stories. Often those are related to not being fueled adequately. And sometimes getting those quick carbs back in, you know, like you said, maybe there's a little caffeine, hopefully not too much. That can turn things around, not only, you know, feeling more energy, but you're feeling so much better psychologically and with your mood, which is important. Dad, you remember in Fiji, Dad kept accusing Shane and I of force feeding him. You know, I told you the timing gets a little challenging with Alzheimer's. Remember that, Dad? Shane became, you know, kind of the you know, let's monitor the feeding. Dad, you remember what you're saying, Shane? Dad?
Yeah, you were.
I promise we weren't making you eat too much or anything, but Dad kept going, man, I'm gonna gain weight out here. What the hell are you guys doing? Dad's been on a mostly I wouldn't say full keto, but you know, generally fairly low carb, higher fat keto / Mediterranean diet since the Alzheimer's diagnosis, because, you know, that's one of the things that's come out that can help people. So I don't know, maybe Dad really didn't need as many carbs as the rest of us did.
He was burning just fat. He didn't need the carbs.
I don't think I eat any carbs. I don't know. Yeah. Of course, I don't pay much attention to it, nor do I know anything about it. So I won't say anything further.
Mom's kind of doing the math and the cooking these days, huh, Ben?
Yeah, for my entire life.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you were much of a cook when mom used to be gone. We were full on carb, right? Dad would, you know, me, my dad, my sisters, all spaghetti, and you got one fork and one plate for the entire duration of mom's absence, huh?
That's funny. I want to give a quick reminder that October 1st, we have the Wim Hof Breathwork Cold Exposure Fundamental Workshop. This workshop is for anyone in the military. It could be present or past. Active, guard, reserve, retired, veteran, doesn't matter. So if you're interested in doing this workshop, head over to the website, consequenceofhabit.org, hit events, scroll down, and register. Still have some spots open. If you're somebody that can't go, but you love the idea of it, you like what we're doing, then you can also head to that website and you can show some love, hit the donate button. I think these workshops are where the rubber really meets the road. It's we're sitting down with people, we're bringing experts or practitioners in whatever habit they're teaching, and we pass this knowledge on to communities that may or may not have had experiences with these types of habits. One of the things I think one of the other things that you'd said is this acceptance that things aren't going to go great, and when we talk about even within the world of habits, it's that acceptance that change is not easy, and to know that when you try something, you got to go into it knowing it's going to suck. And already, you know, this idea of your body can't go where your mind hasn't already been. If you know that on the front end, it sure makes it a little more bearable as you're kind of going through it. So that's not really a question. I'm just kind of throwing it out there to you guys.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And sometimes, though, you know, when you're going somewhere, whether it's starting your podcast, writing your book, maybe for a lot of people, a big jump in a corporate career would be, okay, I've been managing myself, you know, my own, let's say, a sales position. And now, like, oh, man, I've been a great salesperson on my own. And now I'm managing a team, right?
Yeah.
Man, that's a big jump. And you can talk to your previous mentors and read these books about managing teams and all this and that. But when you haven't actually done it, you can't truly imagine it. It's like teaching in front of a classroom, right? You have no idea what the hell you're getting into. Kind of like parenting or marriage,
sure.
Right? You don't know what you're getting into. So you can try to plan ahead, but some of it is just being okay with going into the unknown. And I would also say, I liked what you said about being ready for change. I think even with habits, I think often habits have a shelf life. So you might determine, okay, this thing, this practice, this mindset is working for me now, and it may not work forever. Or it may need a little tweak, or, you know, okay, your life is developing, your kids are getting older, your parents are, like, you know, we're all getting older, but things change. So different habits, different tweaks at different times.
100%. Yeah. You know, We're getting ready to have on a woman named Dr. Anna Lemke, and she's written a book called Dopamine Nation. And that's one of the things as we go into talking to people.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And you've talked about being present, and that's in today's society, that's not an easy thing, right? When you have a reminder of, like, your dad's illness, and it clears things up, but it's not easy. So to going back to that, it was like, all right, if we have a habit that's bringing us this elevated level of dopamine, not doing it is going to be hard, right? It's not going to be comfortable. So just go into it knowing that you need it. It's fundamental. But So let's talk about the book a little bit. It's called Mile at a Time. What was the premise of the book? How incorporated was the race in this? And kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, thanks, JT. I mean, at the core of it, it's a memoir about dad and his life, and really a focus on the Alzheimer's journey. So, you know, that's the idea, is especially for people with Alzheimer's, for their family, for their friends. You know, here's something that may be helpful, whether that's just through an inspirational story or through maybe getting some ideas. You know, we're not, again, it's not prescriptive. We're not sharing things about medications or, sure, or whatever, but, you know, more of a general, a mindset and an approach, if you will, that's team oriented, that's focused on, engagement, that's, you know, hopefully looks more at, you know, what can people do? How can they still be involved? And of course, we're, you know, sad about the losses and the challenges. And there are many of those. But how can we focus on the positives and the love and the creativity. So that's kind of what we're going for. You know, it talks a lot about the Eco Challenge. That was, you know, kind of a main event, but we also go into, you know, life since then. And I just, I'm constantly inspired that, you know, Dad's going through this thing that's really hard. And again, there are losses, you know, like, he can't read. That's really hard. You know, I love reading. Dad always loved reading. It was a big part of how he liked to spend his time and learn, and, you know, it colored his character. Things like that are, you know, they're huge losses, but there's still a lot there. And just because a person has, you know, Alzheimer's or they're blind or, you know, whatever, like, they're still a person. They can still be involved. They can still do great stuff. I mean, Dad and I love hosting these podcasts together and getting out and being active, you know, all that kind of stuff. What do you think, Dad? Do you have any thoughts on the book, the book process? We've been, one of Dad's friends, DJ, has been coming over to read the book to you, huh, Dad? Have you been enjoying that?
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's a good book. Both of you. I'm happy you did a good job with it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dad. So did you.
I'm just a guy kind of hanging around and just looking at stuff. But
no, you worked on it.
You did a great job.
You know, some of these things back to the patients. I mean, another thing I tell myself is usually things will take longer and be harder than we expect them to do. And writing a book, it always takes a long time, but there's so many hurdles, you know, finding the agent, finding the publisher, you know, all these different steps. Now it's finally out online for pre-order, but it doesn't actually hit shelves till March. And, you know, again, like that, you know, keeping track of those timelines, especially when you have Alzheimer's, sure, is pretty tough, but we've been working on it for a long time. And Dad, especially early on, was doing a lot of, journaling for the book, and that was mostly dictating journals about his Alzheimer's journey to my mom, who transcribed them, and we tried to include a lot of those. And I think it's I think it's pretty powerful. A lot of it's raw, you know. We, again, overall the story is optimistic, but it also we tried not to hold back with the, you know, the challenges, the low points. So yeah, it's got Dad's journals. It's, you know, the rest of the writing is done by me and our co-writer, Patrick Regan, who's also from here, down here in Salida, Colorado, who's become a great friend and added a lot to the book. You know, I kind of, again, you know, we're trying to share this idea that life's a team sport, you know, that you gotta ask for help. You gotta take the lead here and there. You got to stay engaged, you know, together. Bringing Patrick into the book was super helpful for me. It's definitely a better book, you know, with some of his touch on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything, like life isn't always pretty. It's difficult. And to not mention those times would be, it'd be insincere. So yeah. Anyone going through it, reading it, there's definitely, I've just from some of the own challenges I've dealt with in my own life, when you hear of somebody else going through those same things, you almost need those really negative things. Cause now there's buy-in. Now I can really take in the messaging that comes from it. So it's like street cred.
Yeah, exactly. I think back to the cycling, you know, when Tyler Hamilton's book came out, you know, I don't know when that 2012-ish maybe or something, but for me, that was the first time where I had seen like, here's a, you know, elite pro endurance athlete in a, you know, in a position that I look up to, who's talking openly about mental health, yeah, especially with depression and anxiety. And for me, that made a huge difference, sure, you know, because I was an elite athlete as well. I was kind of starting to realize, like, you know, things are not always totally well with me, and to be my best, not only as, you know, an athlete and professional, but even more as a husband and father, you know, here's something I need to reach out and ask for support with. Yeah. And that really, I can still remember, like, you know, reading his book, you know, that wasn't necessarily the focus, but it was really helpful for me to, you know, to do that. And I told him, we were lucky to do a podcast with Tyler, and, you know, it was like very gratifying to be able to tell him, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had him on as well, and it, I think if anyone who either reads his book, listens to him on a podcast, you'll have a lot more empathy for the idea of being an athlete and looking up to people around you. Like, in our minds, you see Tyler Hamilton in the Tour de France, like, man, it doesn't get any better, right? Like, this, but they're, yeah, looking up at these other, and they want,
especially then, you know, in, yes, the late 90s, like, I'm a, you know, whatever, I'm, yeah, 15, 16, like, oh, these guys got to be, like, you know, yeah, that's what I want to do, right?
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, you realize they're just people too. They're like, it wasn't all smooth.
And I think it was the line when that one of the coaches said, hey, you're a great cyclist, but you could be doing more. And then that idea of, like, being in this next level of athletes and being on the in group, and that's what we can all connect to. We can all connect, yeah, to wanting to be in that next level. And, you know, we don't always make the best decisions to get there. And to me, the anyone who had vilified a lot of people, if you heard that story, obviously it's not the same in professional cycling, but you could find a time in your life where maybe you didn't make the best decision because you were trying to move up. So yeah, I thought it was great. I agree. So talk about, obviously you've appeared, you've talked about your own podcast. Tell us about your podcast, where we can find it, and what the premise of that is.
Yeah, pretty simple. It's just called the Travis Macy Show. Dad and I host most of the episodes. We have fun talking to people. You know, it ends up being a good amount of endurance athletes, because that's kind of, you know, a bit of our wheelhouse. But yeah, I also, like I said, I love reading. I love interviewing authors. You know, really, the reason the name of the podcast is so undefined is because I realized, you know, for me personally, if I get to talk to one interesting person per week and do some research and read their book or go down their rabbit hole, that's gonna help my life, and it's gonna, you know, put something, like I said, you know, my dad's retired. He his only job right now is professional athlete and professional podcaster, and you know, it's something we really enjoy doing together.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, the second of those two, at least in my experiences, doesn't pay very well. The professional podcaster side, at least monetarily, there is just a ton of value in getting the opportunity to sit down and talk, mm-hmm, to somebody. And I'm sure both of you have found that these relationships continue, right? Like, this isn't usually just something you have a conversation and then, you know, some do, some you may never have talked to, yep, again. But I've met up with people around the country when I'm traveling, with people that I've been lucky enough to have these conversations with. So,
yeah. Yeah. One, back to habits, you know, one habit I often talk about with my clients is the idea of creating a team, and you get to pick your team. And especially if you happen to be self-employed, setting your own schedule, or even more and more, you know, just people working from home in a traditional job, some of that human contact is lost. And yes, it's great to be at home and you have less commute time and, you know, all of that. But, you know, you may be experiencing this loss of human connection. So, you know, my advice is pick your team and choose how you're going to work with them. So, you know, I have a few sort of like standing, you know, calls every 2 weeks or every month or whatever with people who are like, you know, here's someone, maybe they're in my field or a similar field or whatever. Like, we're just going to talk on the phone, you know, for, yeah, half an hour on a regular basis. And sometimes that's a business call where we're sharing strategies or marketing or, stuff about coaching and FTP and all that kind of stuff. And just as often it's like, you know, hey, how are you doing? You know, how are the kids doing? Like how, you know, oh, I remember you said this or whatever. I think that's really helpful. So in a, in a world that's more scattered and more quick conversations by text message and stuff, maybe the habit is create opportunities for regular, deeper conversations.
Yeah, it's not as easy, but it's the payoff is so much more. I mean, and it almost gets back to where you're talking about even erasing it, but sometimes you get into your own head. You need these conversations that get out of this loop that's going around between your own ears, have some connection, especially if it's somebody you look up to, or somebody we have this idea here at Consequence of Habit of building connection through a shared purpose and challenge. Like everyone, we try and build this team around us that's heading in a specific direction and, change is difficult. So we got to do hard things to get there. So, back to
you. Can I throw in another habit real quick?
Let's hear it.
So I was listening, back to your interview with the cycling coach. I really liked what he was saying about person first coaching. So, you could have, your cycling coach, or this could be a boss or a manager who, this is the way I do it. Everyone gets the same thing. I communicate, here's the way. And, one of the things that I realized as a teacher, if we start with the person or the student, who is this who we're working with, and take it from there, things are just going to be so much better. And that's true for an athlete. Athletes are, they're not, we hear this term in cycling, like, oh, they're just robots. Like, and even, look at Primoz Roglic, like, man, that guy is like cool as a cucumber and he just keeps coming back, but he's not a robot. He's a person. And, he's probably figured out, and his coaches and his team have, like, what works for him. So you gotta, start with a person. And I would also say, see if you can apply that to yourself. Like, two ways I think about that is, let's all, if we can, recognize our own neurodiversity, right? We hear that term, and usually we think of like, the diagnosis, like, the spectrum, ADD, twice exceptional, like, whatever. But why I like the word neurodiversity is like, cause it hints at we're all diverse, right? We're an amazing species, and there's a whole lot of variety across the human spectrum, and that's good. But once you understand yourself, then you can more tap into what are the habits that are going to be good for me. Is my, like, a big habit for me is like every morning I get up, I do some yoga, like I'm making my coffee, I have some quiet time to myself. That really helps me. And then I get the kids to school, and I know before I can, really do any good work, I need to get some exercise. And that's a huge habit for me. And that, with my own neurodiversity or my own, place on the spectrum in all these many ways, that's a big habit for me. And then the other one I would say is we had William Irvine on our podcast. He's this stoicism guy. He's written all these books about stoicism, and he's like this wise old professor. We had a lot of fun talking to him, Dad. And
great.
And one of the things he said is like, he said, you get to determine your own game in life and then play it. And and I really like that, figure out what is the game that you're playing. And then, your habit is to play that game daily. So if your game is your game moving up the corporate ladder, well, if that's your game, then play it. If is your game the big fancy house game, well, if that's your game, then play it. But if that's not your game, then don't worry about it. Like, don't give a shit. Who cares? Yeah. And don't try not to let that impact your own view of yourself or, your worth or your place in the world or anything like that.
Yeah, that's hard to do. And it's something that people need to remind, especially in the world we live in, right? Where everything is being compared. And I've dealt with it. I mean, it could be something as small as, hey, my yard doesn't look good, but my neighbor's does. And at the end of the day, I don't care about my yard that much. So I shouldn't have no reflection on me as how I feel about myself or so I completely get what you're saying. And also this idea of acceptance of who you are as an individual and not comparing that. Like, you know, you see some people, and I think this is one of the dangers of the social media age is
yep.
Even if you're trying to become a better version of yourself, we can look at some popular names on in that field, right? So you could look at a David Goggins or, you know, a Jocko or, and you go, oh, I got to do this. But accepting that that may not work into your life. Not everyone gets up at 4 a.m. and starts, you know, their hour-long kettlebell workout. Like, so just accepting where you are in your life. And even with your dad, accepting this, this diagnosis and building your habits around that. Like you said, you switched to a keto because we know that, you know, a higher fat, lower carb may help. Like, so it's, yeah, I love it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, back to, I mean, dad got up early every day for years to go into the office as a lawyer. And, one thing I've, you know, we've learned more about sleep. Like I think, man, you know, if you're going to start with a habit, sleep, you know, help yourself feel good, help yourself, you know, be fit, help yourself hopefully avoid cognitive decline at some point. Sleep is huge. I think, again, in the performance world, we often hear, you know, go, do this. And yeah, maybe that works for some people, you know, but I have definitely moved towards and thought a lot about an approach that's a little more nuanced. And even, you know, yeah, things like back to cycling or athletic performance, you know, data's good. And there's a lot of things in your life that don't show up in training peaks in the data. And especially if you're a parent, if you're a spouse, if you have a job, there's all these things that are playing a big role that don't necessarily show up in the numbers. And maybe again, you know, the go, that might tell us, you know, you're checking email every night and like your phone's always buzzing, right? Every time you get a text or email, it's going to buzz and you're going to look at it. And I turn off notifications. I don't think it's a good idea for your phone to buzz every single time there's something on social media or your text or your email. Like, you know, when I go biking, like I'm biking or when I'm sitting here talking to you, like I don't want something buzzing, or when I'm spending, you know, reading with my kids at night, like I'm reading with my kids at night. I'm not checking emails. I'm winding down so I can sleep. So yeah, sometimes these, you know, these habits or the high performance world also, you know, again, this may be a stereotype, but sometimes folks don't have a direct family in their life, or, you know, they don't have various other things going on. And the best fit for you may not be just go, sure. work. You know, maybe the best fit is dialing it back. Often as a coach, I'm actually helping people scale back and believe in the fact that they're doing less, and then their performance actually gets better.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've seen it. You've seen people overtrain and sometimes it's just that break. Travis, before we go, I have to ask you, because when I started researching, actually, I saw it come up on some of the posts that Palmer had put out. You got to explain this racing with the donkey to me.
Yeah.
And then Mark, I want your reaction because this, I'm going to guess, has this been a thing for a long time? I mean, I would love, fill us in.
Yeah, not for me, but it has been a thing for a long time. So there's a sport in Colorado called Pack Burro Racing. It's happened every year in Leadville and Fairplay and these little old mining towns since 1949. And you know, it's kind of how exactly it started, no one really knows, but it's based in mining history. So, you know, back in the boom days, you know, you would have these prospectors out there looking for a vein of gold or, you know, a silver deposit or whatever. And, you know, these are basically probably mostly men at that time who are out in the mountains, you know, with a pick and shovel digging around, and you'd find the gold and then you'd have to stake the claim. So literally they'd put a stake in the ground, like this is my claim. And then they'd have to get back, you know, you got to get to the surveyor's office or whatever it was in downtown Leadville and make that claim official before, you know, the other guy, you know, gets it. So you're running back, you got your burrow, your pick pan shovel, you know, running in boots or whatever, you know, and it'd be kind of a race. So there's kind of that. And then the other story is that you'd have miners, you know, sitting at a bar after hours, you know, oh, me and my borough could beat you and your borough, you know, up and over Mosquito Pass from Leadville to Fair Play. Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, pretty soon the race is on. Yeah. So, you know, it's been a thing, you know, since 1949, women were competing right at the start, which I think is awesome and unique. If you look compared to, you know, women had to break into the Boston Marathon years later. And here they are, you know, Leadville Fair Play, 10,000 feet, you know, out here running around with donkeys. So dad got me into it. Remember that, dad, when I was a kid, we went like up to Georgetown, Colorado, and we watched that race. Do you remember going there, dad?
Sure. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, it was cool. We saw that chaos, man. I remember the gun going off and like most of the donkeys run forward. Some of them run sideways. Some go backwards. I mean, it's chaos. And, you know, I was, even at that time, you know, there were the mainstream endurance athletes, but there was all, you know, like a guy like Tom Sobel, who's this, you know, one of the, in Colorado, mountain runner, snowshoe racer, burro racer. Like I was always looking up to those kind of guys too. And so anyway, like 2 years ago, since I was a kid, when I went to that race, I was like, I'm going to do this sport. And, you know, I'm doing this, doing that, running, mountain biking, you know, all this kind of stuff. For some reason, like 2 years ago, I was like, this is it. I'm doing it now. You know, I moved to Salida, Colorado, which is a more rural town, and there's some more, you know, donkeys around in people's fields. And I said, I'm going to try this. So, yeah, it's kind of been my main summer thing. You know, it's this wild combination of, you know, mountain fitness. Like I said, the longest race is 29 miles. The shortest race is like 5 miles. You're running with a donkey, you know, up in the hills, you know, the mountain fitness, there's intellectual challenge. It's like super dynamic. There's all these things going on. You got to communicate with the burro, you know, certain burros like each other and don't like each other. How do you keep them together or apart? How do you manage your relationships with the other competitors? And then the last piece is just good old redneck ruckus. I mean, it is like, it's a full on like adventure, and there's some tough, hard nosed competitors. It's the real deal. So, you know, anyway, then next year, probably instead of the Tour de France, they're going to be streaming the Burro Racing Series, I'm sure.
Yeah. Right. All right. I'm glad I know the history, because it's almost like NASCAR and moonshining. Like once you understand, you're like, oh, okay, well now that's where it was kind of born out of.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that's all right. All right. I'm in then. I wasn't before, but hearing that, Travis, I'm in. I'm ready.
Yeah. You should come out, man. It's a weird combo, because there's people like me who like, you know, you got a background in running and you like animals. Like, let's try this. You got a bunch of people who like have a background in horses and burros and mules, and you know, they also like fitness. So, so they're in it. And then you also have a lot of people like JT. If you looked at the schedule next summer and you were like, I want to come do one race, you could come or take a road trip, fly out, family vacation, whatever. And you could rent a burro, you know, for one of these races. And it's just like a fun bucket list thing, and get some pictures and have fun and, you know, hope that it moves forward instead of, you know, sitting down and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. If I'm renting one, this son of a bitch better just go forward. Like that's the only with a saddle.
Most of the rentals are, you know, they know what they're doing. Sure,
Awesome. Listen, guys, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Is there anything you think that we should cover here that we haven't gotten to?
Dad, do you have any, if anyone out there, maybe someone who has Alzheimer's or if their family's navigating it, anything you would want to say to them, Dad?
Yeah, I would like to. And, you know, I've had Alzheimer's for several years now, and I want to tell people who are new, if you will, to the Crohn's disease, you know, you can be happy. I'm a happy guy. You know, I've got a great family, got a great wife, great kids. little kids, big kids, and you know, I run every single day.
Wow.
Most days I run, or not most days, but many days I run twice a day, which I'm going to do today. I got two runs I'm going to get in here today, and just keep the faith that things can be good for you. And they are. Yeah. Mine, I'm just a regular guy. And like I said, I'm a happy guy. So keep the faith and don't quit. Thank you.
Mark, I applaud your vulnerability at the same time of being very open with what you've gone through. You know, there's a lot of people when they get it, it doesn't have to be the same diagnosis, but that's almost their curtain call, right? And they kind of just go deal with it in their own. So I think there's a tremendous amount of strength in being vulnerable, opening up to the world, talking about the positive and talking about the negative. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
Likewise. Real quick before we go, to tell everyone, it's the Travis Macy Show, where you can hear both Mark and Travis. They'll be interviewing other people, and also if you want to pre-order the book is called A Mile at a Time. And where can they pre-order that?
Wherever books are sold, JT, you know, there's the good old Amazon, Barnes and Noble. Sure. It will, again, it'll be, you know, on shelves in March. So if you want to support your local bookstore, or even, you know, tell your bookstore now that you're interested, they can pre-order it for you. And it's on our publisher's website as well. The publisher's is called Imagine Publishing. So if you go there and search the title, it'll come up there.
And we're going to have links to all of these things in the show notes. And I urge everyone also to head over to travismacy.com, because we didn't even get into some of your athletic endeavors. I mean, I'm reading them, and I'm between the two of you, it's a very impressive resume of doing lots of hard shit, like some really impressive things. So awesome. Thank you guys so much. I enjoyed the conversation, and I hope to have another one with you both soon.
Yeah. Thanks, JT. Awesome to be here. Yeah. Keep up what you're doing with the podcast, with the mission, I think it's awesome. You guys have a nonprofit, and like you're making a difference. So way to go, man.
Thanks, bud. All right, guys. Take care.
All righty. See you, JT. See you, Dad.
Hello, everyone. My name is Luis, and I'm the host of the Ordinary Yogi Podcast. Did you know that beneath the physical practice of yoga, there is a shit ton of philosophy and lessons that can be applied to daily life? In this podcast, I break down the teachings and benefits of yoga and show you how to apply them through personal stories and guest interviews to help you become more mindful and present. To become an Ordinary Yogi, subscribe to the Ordinary Yogi Podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcast platforms. No yoga pants or man buns required.
Everybody, that's a wrap. Like always, thanks again for checking us out. This show is brought to you by the team here at Consequence of Habit and is an arm of our 501c3 nonprofit. The show is produced and edited by the one and only Anthony Palmer and is part of the Palm Tree Pod Company network of podcasts. That's it. I'll catch you guys next week.